we're going to have to go to the old-fashioned method of actually listening. Sometimes two people are talking, but neither one is listening. And sometimes, you know, you say, well, I have communicated, I have told them, you know, but sometimes we have to investigate what we are saying. How many of you finished your wish list or at least got one or two items on your wish list? Because you're going to be working with that. See, I work this morning and you're working this afternoon. Isn't that wonderful? Well, you have to work or you would fall asleep, and then that would really hurt my feelings. So I'm just going to, if you fall asleep on each other, you got to go home and face each other, and, you know, it's not going to be my problem. All right, so for your wish list, it's very important that you are specific. I had a couple, and they told me to make sure, they gave me permission, said, please share our story. They were filling out their wish list, and she put down, she said, I wish that he would share more. I wish Colin would share more. And she meant feelings, and he thought she meant the cookies he had eaten the other day. He's like, share more? I didn't know you wanted any cookies. And she's like, what cookies? I'm talking about your feelings. So you have to be very specific. You know, when you say, I wish you would share more, what does that mean? Share cookies, share emotions, you know, share thoughts. What are you asking for? Because we have to clarify, we have to define what that means, or it will absolutely mean nothing. We're going to start working on hearing, all right? How we hear. First of all, remember, complaining and criticizing are not good communication skills. It's what we use, but they're not good skills. George Bernard Shaw said, the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. So couples come in for counseling, and you know, you're kind of trying to get a sense of what is the situation in the relationship, and usually we'll bring up the subject, you know, we just can't communicate. And so if we begin to explore that, what does that really mean? Does it mean one of you literally lacks the ability to share information in a way that other people can comprehend it? Or is it something that's blocking the two of you sharing information and hearing it? So that's something that we're going to work on today, that there may be a lot of talking going on, but no one is hearing. You know, hear it all. We might need it, but we're going to have to do it ourselves. What it takes to hear what your spouse is trying to tell you is to be non-defensive, because if you're defensive and they say, you know, you don't do this, or I wish you would do this, and you have this whole response based on how wonderful you are and how you do that and more, then you're not hearing them. Because sometimes people will start and just blabber a whole bunch before they actually get to what they really want to tell you. So you have to have a non-defensive attitude. You can't be immediately offended. You have to be willing to hear. And you have to become very curious about your spouse. Very interested, very curious. What makes them the way they are, and how can I know them better? And if you are not curious about what they're trying to say to you, that is indicative of bigger problems than your ears. And maybe that involves your heart. Your heart's not engaged. Now, I'm going to give you some basics about active listening before you start. My husband and I had this early on in our marriage. I would want to pour my heart out to him, and he would want to interrupt me with advice on how I could fix the problem. Oh, that is just wrong on every level. I'm trying to pour out my heart. I'm telling him, and he's like, well, you know, what you need to do is you need to blah, 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 blah. And I didn't say this out, and I hope no children hear this and I scar them for life, but in my head, I'm going, shut up. I'm trying to pour my heart out. I don't need advice. I don't need a solution. I'm smart. I'm going to figure this out. I need someone to listen to me. I need someone to go, no, really? Oh, I hate that. Oh, tell me more. Oh, don't leave out one detail. But that's, you know, we're different. So, you know, but fortunately, he's married to a very good counselor. And after years of educating him, he's really come around. He still has that glassy look. But he does, you know, he does rouse himself to interject at appropriate times, you know, in appropriate ways. So active listening is not offering advice. It's not fixing the problem. It's not rushing in to talk the moment your partner pauses for breath. You know, I shouldn't have to just talk and talk without breathing in order for me to get it all out. It's not, you don't want to lie to your spouse to spare their feelings, but neither do you have to be cruel in the name of honesty. You know, if, say, your spouse said, is my nose too big for my face? And you say, no, it's perfect. Well, that it may not be true, and they would know it, so they wouldn't be trusting you. But neither would you say, oh, yeah, you need a nose job. People could ski off that mountain. You know, that's unnecessarily cruel. You know, you don't have to be that honest either. So what we're looking for, we're not looking for true answers. We're looking for you to help us think through what we're going through. So instead of making statements, you learn how to ask questions. That's active listening. Active listening is hearing them say something, and then you're curious about how that applies to them, so you ask them more questions, which for some of you, that feels painful, just knowing you would have to do that. You just want to give advice, shut this down, fix the problem, okay, let's go on. But no, we are going to be good listeners. So, you know, the kinder, more active listening response would be, well, how do you feel about your nose? You know, that would be the goal that everyone would have, you know, to ask a good question. When your spouse raises an issue and you feel like you're under attack, you have to resist the urge to counterattack. You know, well, oh, well, you know, it's true I did that, but I did it because you've done these 10 things. That's not good listening. That's just fighting. It's just having a throwdown. When you're trying to deal with one thing that you want to work on, you can't bring up years of garbage. You don't go back to all of the things that have happened over the past 30 years. Hopefully, we'll resolve those, we'll get that taken care of, and we'll move on. But once it's been dealt with, you can't keep bringing it up again. That's not fair. We're going to stick with what we need to deal with. You want to make sure that you're hearing what your partner is trying to say to you. And that takes practice. You know, a lot of times people say, I'm such a good listener. But what's really happening is people go to them and they're talking to them. And while they're talking, you're thinking of what you're going to say if they would just hurry up and quit talking because you have a great response. You have a great story that you could tell them to help them. You know, all of those. You're a great listener. And so they're trying to talk to you, and you're a great listener, and you're talking over them, competing for airtime with them, and they're just like not responding at all. They can't wait for you to stop talking so they can resume talking, and nothing has happened here, and you don't want that in your relationship. So what is it like to feel like someone has really listened to you? What is that like when you have been truly listened to? You've told someone something and they have been engaged with you. I mean, you've had eye contact. They're leaning in. They care. You can see it's all over their face. That's the most important conversation they're having. And they're helping you think about it. What is that like? Have you ever had it? I mean, no one's raising their hand. Maybe no one's ever had that. And they're like, what is it like? What does it feel like? It makes you feel like it's important, you're refreshed. What if they didn't come up with a solution to your problem? It doesn't even matter because that's not what you're looking for. What is it like when you come to somebody and you're trying to be understood? Sometimes I don't even know what I'm thinking till I talk about it. Have you ever had that? It's like as you're talking about it, it becomes like, oh, that's how I feel and think. I just need to process it, and I need someone who cares about me to process this with me. So it's very important. Now, what I want you to do, you can take 1 minute each, is I want you to look at your spouse, and I want you to share something they do, a way they interact with you that makes you feel like they listen to you. Now, if you don't feel listened to, just fake it because that'll be really embarrassing for them, okay? So just look and move your mouth and pretend you're saying something. All right, quickly, you only have a minute. I feel like you have listened to me. Just see this a second. Do you have communication? Okay, I have to keep using yours. I'm not sure what Francie sent over. Okay, now the next thing that you're going to do is in your handout, in your little workbook that you have, there is a section that's called communication blocks. Now, here's one of our issues, our problems, is we have bad habits. Anybody here have a bad habit in communication? I obviously am apologizing. I haven't repented because I'm working on them, but I still have some bad habits. Now, in my class at the graduate school, this communication blocks is so important in people work. If you're going to be in the ministry and work with people, that my students have to take this, and they actually have to have their employer fill it out, their closest relationships fill it out, and it's anonymously sent back to me so people aren't worried about getting fired or whatever. And so they have professors that fill it out, and numerous key people fill this out and send it to me, and then I give them an overall. This is what most people say they experience in communication with you. Now, that takes either your grade is riding on it or a lot of courage, because we don't truly want to hear how ineffective we are at communicating. But we all have them. I have them, and some of them I work on. Sometimes I do better than others. So here's what I want you to do. Each of you take your worksheet, and I want you to go through, and I want you just to tick off the blocks there that you think apply to you in communication. What do you do? Okay, this isn't about your spouse, this is about you. What do you do in communication if it's listed in this block? So very quickly, you may know yourself enough that it won't take long. Just as many of them as apply. Pick off all the ones that you feel like are applicable to you. You know you do these things. Okay. Now, take your paper and hand it to your spouse. Now, because we want to know the difference. You've ticked off the ones that's what you said you do. Now, spouse, I want you to go through and circle the block if you think your spouse does it. Whether they ticked it off or not, you circle it. Okay? If you feel like your spouse does this, you circle it with me. Nice to have a broad response from people like employers or professors or friends and family as well as your spouse, because if one person says it, you can say, obviously they don't know me. But if 20 people say it, then it's kind of like, maybe I do these things. Horrible. All right, has everyone done that? Now, let your partner see what you circled that you think that they do. Don't hit them if you don't agree. It's okay. You don't have to agree with them. The purpose of this exercise is to give you some awareness about how other people perceive you. You know you're wonderful, but not everyone is as intelligent as you are. They stumble. Okay, so if you don't agree, if there's one, maybe if your spouse circled giving the silent treatment, you could, since we're in a group and surely behaviors will stay moderate to mild, you can say, could you give me an example of a time that I've done that? Unless you know, and then there's no need to ask. But if you're really confused, if you're thinking, how can you say this? I've never done that. Okay, so quickly, as a couple, what are you seeing that you agree on? Like, I know I do this. I know I'm an interrupter. I know it. What are you seeing that you agree on? Pick two each of you pick two areas. Like for myself, okay, I know that I can be sarcastic and I know that I can be an interrupter. I'll agree on those two things. Pick two things on each for each spouse that you agree on. I'm going to pass these rubber bands around. You need to put them on your wrist, one per person. Somebody wants to help with them. I don't know. Here, everybody needs a rubber band. Pass it around. Okay, did everybody, I know that you don't have too many faults, but did you find two things that maybe you do that you know you could work on? At least one. Okay. Now we're going to implement something that I hope you will take home with you and at least try it for a week. You're going to be wearing these very beautiful rubber bands. It's going to be all the rage for a week at least. All right. Everybody have their rubber band on their... You'll never look at bands the same again. Okay, what I need you to do, if you're brave and you're really wanting to change, I need you to give your partner, your spouse, permission that when you do the thing that you no longer want to do, because you're willing to change, that your partner, with all the love in their heart, can just, without saying a word, can... Now, not to the point they have to go to the emergency room. But, you know, it's just like, you know, when you do that, it stings. So I'm going to give you this little reminder of how your behavior stings. Now, you can't do this unless your partner gives you permission, because then you would be abusing them. Now, it's not meant to hurt your partner, lest you take advantage of my good nature. It's just meant to say, hey, it's a gentle reminder. You know, and other couples, you all have to have reminders of, hey, because I've done this for so long, I'm not even thinking I'm doing it. I don't even recognize I'm doing it. Now, my husband and I, we've created other things. We're both interrupters because we love to talk and we're smart and love to hear ourselves and all of that. We're both interrupters. And so when my husband gets to talking, like I've timed him. I think he's gone 20-something minutes without breathing or pausing. So we have this signal. Now, it's funny to us, you know, and other people might think it's strange, but it's your relationship. And everything should be fun. It shouldn't be torture. It shouldn't be doom and gloom. You're working together to improve it. It should be fun. You're working together. You're a team. So we have this way of doing it that we think is funny, but it gets the point across. When he's just talking, and I can't respond, and I can't get my... I'm like, you know how kids do in school when they want to say something to the teacher, and they're like... I'll do that to him, and likewise, he'll sometimes be like, and you know what? We're not interrupting each other because we're not going to talk over each other. We don't want to disrespect each other, but we want a funny way that we can remind each other, wait, it's my turn. Let me have my time, you know, whatever. I don't care what it is in your marriage. You need to have stop signs with each other, ways of communicating that other people may not even know, like the rubber band. Maybe, you know, we get in bad habits that we need to change. Maybe for some people, they like to tell funny stories about their spouse, but it embarrasses their spouse. Their spouse is humiliated. Well, you know, punching them in the face at church in the foyer is not really the way to handle it, you know. Like, I told you not to tell that story. It's really inappropriate. But, you know, sometimes you just have to have that reminder, like, I remember I told you that's not funny? Pop. And nobody knows, but you know. So whatever you need to do to help each other, remember. So you have your two? Everybody have their two? Okay, I want you to look at your spouse and say to them, in essence, you're going to make a commitment to your spouse. You're committing that you're going to work on those two areas. Like for myself, mine would, I could say, you know what, when I'm really upset or hurt, I could resort to being sarcastic. And I don't want to be that kind of woman. So I'm really, Stan, I would say to him, Stan, when I'm sarcastic, I want you to give me the stop sign. Because I want to be aware I'm doing this. And if I don't get it, I give you permission to pop this rubber band to remind me. So tell your spouse what you plan on working on, what you're committing to work on, and then if you want to, you can give them permission, or you can create your own stop sign. If you don't want to use the rubber band, create your own stop sign. Okay, go ahead. Do the work. James 1 and 19 says, be quick to hear and slow to speak. And unfortunately, we get that turned around and we're quick to speak and slow to hear. So by the time a couple arrives in a counseling session, there's a lot of frustration. And so when you try to talk about painful issues in marriage, when you feel disrespected, when you feel like you're not heard, if you know you're going to be attacked, if you know you're going to be interrupted, if you know you're going to be shamed, who can work on the painful issues of marriage if you're not safe with each other? There's no good work can be done if you're just hurting each other. So our goal is to begin to try to understand our partner and to have a different approach to listening. In the PrEP program, Prevention and Relationship Enhancement Program, it was developed by Markham and Stanley. There is a tool called the speaker-listener technique, and we need these handed out, and it's only one per couple. Give me a hand with this. So you're each going to get a carpet square. Don't pay any attention to the people passing them out as long as you have one by the time it's over. Because you're going to now take your wish list. You're going to take items on your wish list. And you're going to work on not whatever those communication blocks are. You're going to work to not use those because you don't want any blocks. So we're going to learn to be both the speaker and the listener. You know, it's so much easier to go to a marriage workshop where they tell you to go on a date night and, you know, be nice to each other and leave love notes. That's the kind I want to go to, because then I can leave and not do a thing, you know, and if I don't ever want to change, it's not an issue because they didn't tell me I had to change. But intervention is a whole different approach to how we work in marriages. And that's my training. I'm an interventionist. And as an interventionist, I know that if we don't do this work, you'll leave here and it'll be a day well spent, but not a day that's produced any results. Change is hard. It's easier to do what you've always done, even if what you've always done is painful and non-productive. And I'm asking you and inviting you into a whole different way of living with your partner. All right. So we're going to be using the speaker-listener technique, and that is you're just going to share what you think or feel or desire or want. You're not going to be trying to mind read, because remember, you don't have to do that anymore, praise the Lord, because we're going to communicate with language. You have to keep your statements brief. You can't do 25 minutes. If you talk to me for 25 minutes, I heard the first three sentences. And then something happens to my mind, and I'm like, their mouth is moving, but I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I have a learning disability, but that's how I function. So you have to just be short with it. And then after you've made a statement or you've made a request, you've said something important, then you pause to allow the person you're speaking to actually respond to it so that they can make sure they've heard you well. This sounds complicated, but it's basic communication skills. It's what we do for other people that we seem to think we can't take home and do at home. You know, if you go to the store, you don't normally come home and say, oh, I had such a communication problem at Walmart today. Right? Because we tend to be able to say what we need and want at the grocery store or at the any kind of store. Right? So, but when you have hurt or you feel like you're not going to be received or shut down, we have a hard time saying what we need. Now, listener, when it's your turn to listen, that's all you're doing is listening. You're not fixing. You don't have to come up with any advice or solutions. This is so easy. You're just listening. That's it. What a relief. The load is off. The pressure is off. So you're just trying to hear what they're saying. So we're going to do an experiment on listening, all right? So you have your carpet square. What are some basic manners? One thing you know, and you've all practiced it, so you know it. When I'm speaking in the mic, you're listening to me, aren't you? Well, you may be tuned out, but you're very polite. You're not talking. When the preacher's preaching, you don't just say, oh, I think I'll have a conversation. Hey, when are you guys coming to Jersey? Because that's extremely rude, right? Because the minister is speaking. He has the floor. We cannot forget. Remember, restore honor, basic manners in marriage. When someone is trying to communicate or speak to you, they have the floor. The person with the problem has the floor. The person who needs to communicate something has the floor. They don't own the floor. They have to share it. That's why you only have one. If you each had one, you'd be waving it around and acting like you both had time to speak, okay? So what I want you to do is I want you to take your wish list, and I want you to share, each of you share a wish off of the wish list, okay? Now, I have no idea what you've written, but I'm going to give you an example. If for some reason I wanted to say to Stan, I wish that you would bring me flowers. That is not enough. That means nothing to him. He's scared because that means nothing to him. But if I say, Stan, I wish on our anniversary that you would send me a dozen red roses in a vase with a red ribbon around the vase to my workplace so all the women there will be jealous and know how much you love me. That's what I really want you to do. He gets it. He repeats back to me, you want a vase of a dozen red roses with a red ribbon sent to your office on our anniversary. Is that correct? Yes. He's like, I can do that. Right? So sometimes we're saying, I wish, and it means absolutely nothing to the hearer. And so if I'm thinking in my head, I want him to send me a dozen red roses to my office so all the women will be so jealous, think I have the best husband. And he's thinking, oh, she wants flowers. Look at those beautiful daisies on the side of the road. How romantic that would be if I stop and pick her daisies and bring them and lay them on the table for her. And I walk in and I'm like, what are these weeds doing here? Who put these weeds on the table? And then he's feeling like, I cannot please this woman. This woman, I cannot. She said she wanted flowers. I bring her flowers, and this is the thanks I get. Am I making sense? So this wish, so if I was this vague to say, Stan, I wish you would bring me flowers. Being a good hearer, listener, he would not only say, you want me to bring you flowers. He would say, what kind of flowers? Do you want them in a vase or in a box? Do you want them wrapped or unwrapped? What color was that? And when do you want them and where do you want them? Because see, what did I say about listening? You become very curious. Very curious. What does it mean? What does it mean when you say these things? It means nothing. It's only what's in your head that no one else has a clue what you mean. All right? So we're going to start with the wishes. If you feel like you get in a situation, basically one person has the floor. I wish whatever. And when you feel like you've said everything about that wish that you have, you hand the floor to your partner, and your partner can clarify, ask questions until they get it. They don't tell you, let me tell you, there's a sale going on at the florist. No, they're like, it doesn't matter. You tell me what you want. And then when you say, yes, that's exactly it, you've got it, then it's, you say, okay, well, if I have it right, then I'm going to share my wish with you. And you just go back and forth until you completely, until you completely understand what each other's asking for. All right, are you good? Does anybody have any questions? I'm going to just walk around, and if you feel like your partner just doesn't get it, stop me. Because I know you do. You got it, but you know these people we deal with. They can present complaints without criticism. They freely give and receive influence. They are able to reverse negativity. That means a couple that is stable can tell when a conversation is escalating into a place it doesn't need to go and stop the process. When it's starting to heat up, they're able to say, wait, let's start over. Or this is not the kind of couple we want to be. This is not the kind of conversation we want to have. Let's stop this right here. And maybe we need to take 15 minutes and calm down. But you don't not leave the house. Maybe you just need to leave the room. You're not going to run away. You're going to stay right there and handle it. Couples who are stable and healthy can inject positives into the negative. They don't just spiral into this, it's all bad, it's all horrible. They learn to laugh with each other. That's a great thing. If you can laugh with each other about something, and they are able to use that. They can laugh at what's going on, not at each other. Laughing at each other is not right. Laughing with each other is healing. It's helpful. When you can see your behavior, you know, and change it and make a difference. Okay, well, this was a fun one. This was a great practice because you're saying, I wish. But there's another one, and this is not the easy one. This is more of the complaint side of it. This is what we really don't want to hear. It's one thing if I say to Stan, I wish you would bring me flowers. He's like, I can do that. But when I say, when you tell corny jokes in public, no. When you, so it's something to me. When you, I feel because, and that's why I react the way I do. So when you are in a crowd and you do not introduce me to your friends, I feel disrespected or rejected, and that's why I ignore you all the way home. Am I making sense? Okay. So there's also, we need to not only present the, I wish we could do this, I wish this would be more present in our relationship, but sometimes, you know, those communication blocks and those bad habits we have, we're not intending to destroy our spouse. You know, we're not intending to, like, I didn't wake up in the morning and say, whoa, what can I do to really wreck my marriage today, huh? You know, but we can be thoughtless sometimes. Even good people can be so thoughtless. We're just wrapped up in the day. We're busy. We're trying to get things done. We're not intentionally, but it doesn't mean we don't, just because it wasn't a deliberate act of cruelty. We can do things that need to be mended and tended to. So I should not be angry and just stew and brew about it and be mad at Stan and make him pay in all kinds of ways. And he's like, is anything wrong? Should there be? No, I can't think of anything. Fine, nothing's wrong. You all know you've had those car rides home, huh? You know. That is immaturity on my part. I'm hurt. My feelings are hurt. I need a change to happen. He's clueless. And vice versa, it's happened on both sides. You know, that he's all, his feelings are all hurt. And I'm like, what? And then I want to be just like, oh, why didn't you tell me? I could change this. I didn't know that bothered you. I'm clueless. It didn't bother my dad. Which never say that. A man should never say, my mom didn't cook it like that. No. No. You may never eat again. No. And I don't need to compare my husband to my dad. You know, and that's one that, especially if you were a daddy's girl, you default to, my daddy wouldn't have done that. Well, you're not married to your dad, obviously. I was his princess. I'm Stan's wife. He won't run out in the middle of the night and buy me tacos that I'm not going to eat. I just want. My dad would. And no, it's sick. All right. So something has happened, and I need to bring it to Stan's attention, or he needs to bring it to my attention. And so we have to do this hard work, because this is where it's not feel good. This is where you've done something and it hurt my feelings, and I'm now hurt and reactive. But I want to inform you like an adult, a Christian adult, so we've got to communicate. So Stan, when we go to events and you basically ignore me the whole time, I am embarrassed and hurt and I feel disrespected, because I'm your wife. I should be introduced to everybody because I'm important to you. And that's why I'm no longer speaking to you, Stan. And then he has the ability to respond. Well, you know, I was going to introduce you, but I turned around and you weren't there. What can we do next time? You know, since I tend to wander off on my own, it's kind of hard for him to introduce me to everybody when I'm like off doing my own thing. But do you see, using the same skills that I just taught you, the listener, you know, Stan needs to just say, well, what happened? Who was it you wanted to be introduced to? When, you know, ask me all the questions. Be curious. Now, I know this is going to be hard for this group because you all are here for your friends. But has there been in this past week, has there been a moment that maybe you had a little bit of a hurt feeling? I'm not saying talk about the really bad stuff, because we got to leave by 4. But is there something that maybe it was from your communication block? Maybe you were trying to say something and you were interrupted, or there was sarcasm, or something deliberate, or not deliberate, but something like being ignored. Anything that this week that you could try practicing to bring to your partner's attention, a behavior that when you do this, I feel. The goal is not to say, when you do this, you are the worst person on the planet. I can't stand you. My mother hates you. And you know, this is not what we're doing here, folks. The thing is, my husband really loves me. But sometimes what's important to me, he wouldn't even think about it. He doesn't care if I introduce him to everybody. He's going to introduce himself. It does not matter to him. So some things that really matter to me, it wouldn't even cross his mind that it should matter, because it wouldn't matter to him at all. So it's my job to say, you know what, I know that that's not something you think of, but this is how I feel when it happens. This is what I feel. And he doesn't want to make me feel that way. That's not his goal in life. He wants me to feel loved. So then he has an opportunity to, one, learn something about me that I've kept hidden for 30 years. Or, you know, and two, he has the opportunity to make a mid-course correction. Because like every one of you in this room, you're trying to get it right. And it's a lifetime process. And no matter how many years you've been a counselor, you still have moments in your marriage where you have to do the same work that you teach other people to do. I wish it fixed everything, but we're human. And until heaven, we need the Lord. Okay, so if you can, I want you to think of something that has that you want to bring to your partner's attention that has the potential to have a little bit of a sting to it when it happens. Okay, not the worst. Not the most difficult thing in your relationship. Something we're going to start with baby steps. We're going to baby step our way through this, all right? So just the sting. Can you all think of something? No, it's difficult, but can you just like twitch when you think of something? Okay, I got one. All right. Now, here's what you do. Who has the floor? The first person who wants to go has the floor. Again, we're practicing. You're giving them a small little bit of words with a whole lot of information. You don't have to go on 20 minutes. Three sentences, you're giving it to them. When this happens, I feel, I think, and that's why I do this. All right, go ahead, practice. If you need me, raise your hand. When you, I feel, and react by, and you, the partner, you don't have to agree. You just need to understand. Did each person have an opportunity to express something? I know we're just practicing. You got to go home and do this. Which, God bless you. I hope you do it. So much easier to say, hey, I really think we had a great marriage before we went there and had to start all that listening stuff. I liked it so much better when I just interrupted you and gave you advice. This is hard. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not easily provoked. So here we are, men and women of God, with biblical principles as our guide. So it's not just how we behave in church. It's not that just limited to, am I a good example at work? Do I invite people to church, and do they know I'm a Christian? I think the best measuring stick of my Christianity, so to speak, is how well do I live out biblical principles of relationship in my home? How am I doing there? Because anybody can be a great person in public for a few hours at a time, but who am I when no one is looking? Who am I in my home, in the privacy of my home? Philippians 2 and 3 says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than self. And that was talking about your spouse too, not just the stranger outside. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. These are biblical principles that have to be at work in marriages. They work. I'm just trying to help you with tools and techniques and skill building so that you can stop. This is your stop sign. What we've been doing may not have been working as well. And we're not living out biblical principles. We're not doing what God's asking us to do in our own marriage. Let it start in your own marriage. Let it start in your own home and let it flow out from there and be that good example to everyone else around us. You have to be willing to stick together through it because this is a learning experience. This is a different way of living. But I'm so thankful that God got involved in my life and he was like, you know what? This is a great time for you to change. I didn't think I needed to. I thought everybody else needed to change. I'm being serious. I thought I was precious. I thought I was such a good person. I was wonderful. I was sweet. I was so many things. And then one day as I was praying for God to help everybody else because they all needed help and they all needed to change. No, and I was very sincere because they were mean, you know, or hateful or whatever, these people. Because remember I told you I moved in and I was living in Jersey with Jersey from Texas. And then I was going to church with my husband's in-laws from his first marriage. And they didn't love me. They didn't like me. And it was all so painful. And I just kept praying for them that God would change them. And then one day the Lord spoke to me and he said, I want to change you. Now, I'm not one to say I hear the voice of the Lord. The Lord does not chit-chat with me or gossip with me. I'm not one of those. But you know those moments when you feel you're in prayer and you can't explain what just happened, but you clearly understand that the Lord has given you something about you. Am I making sense? And it was in that moment I was just crying. I was so broken. I was so tired of hurting. Because you will get to a place that you are tired of hurting. You're tired of difficulty. You're tired of every relationship being so painful and hard. And I'm crying and I'm broken. And he said, I want to change you. And that hurt my feelings, Pastor. I was like, but I'm the one behaving down here. Because I really felt like I was trying. But the Lord wasn't saying, I want to change you because you're wrong and they're right. He was going to deal with them in his own way, but he's like, you know what? If you're going to grow and mature and thrive in life, if anything good is going to come, I'm going to take you to another level. And that's going to come through change in you. When I changed, everything changed. Everything changed, except the circumstances. I still lived in the same house. I still went to the same church. I still had the same outlaws, his former in-laws. I still had, everything was the same externally. The circumstances didn't change. But because I changed, because I was growing, because the Lord was saying, there's a better way to live. I can help you if you will trust me and use my word and really use those principles in your relationship, even though they're contrary to what the world says is good and works. If you'll believe me and put this into practice, everything's going to change. You see, when I lost, not, I don't want to say I lost my insecurity. I don't know how to word this. But as insecurity became less of an issue for me, as I grew in not in my own ability, but confidence in my God that he would take care of me, then I wasn't having to be a people pleaser anymore. I wasn't so insecure that I'd walk in the room, what do you need to be happy? Okay, I can do that. What do you need to be happy? I can do that. That's exhausting. I could walk into a room and I could be me, and I want you to love me, but if you don't, I don't fall apart over it. I feel sorry for you because we could really have a lot of fun if you would just love me. Life would be grand, right? But before, it was just so much insecurity, so much other junk from my childhood and past and life issues. God wants to heal us up. He wants to heal us and take us to another level. So when the Lord says through the pastor, through the teaching of the word, it's time for you to change, you can't be offended by that. If I say here today in this room, if you would just change, things would be better. That's not an offense to you. That's an invitation. If you'll just step into a little bit of change and look what the Lord will do, if you will just allow him to mature you and grow you, if you'll just look at the biblical principles and apply them to your life. Before we end this session, does anyone have any questions? I have just given you a basic technique that if you were in counseling with me, you would practice over and over and over again until you hated it. I had a couple that I had to give them so many carpet squares. They had them in purses and cars and bags and on the platform, and yes, I said on the platform, and they took them on vacation. It wasn't me and Stan, by the way. It's our music director. But they were trying, and I love people who try. And they said they were on vacation skiing and had their carpet square with them when they had a moment, they had this understanding, a revelation came to them, and they got it. I don't know. It's just a tool. You can create your own tools. But if that helps, I'm happy for you. Anybody have any questions? I know it was a quick introduction to listening, quick introduction to being very clear, asking for what you want, not making people guess.